The Veritas Radio Network and the Crusade Channel present Kurt Wallace's The Flow. Real interviews with real people revealing real truths. Heard exclusively on the Veritas Radio Network's Crusade Channel and available online at veritasradionetwork.com. Radio, the way it should be.
Presented by Veritas Radio Network, I'm Kurt Wallace, and this is The Flow. Our guest today is Daniel Hayes. He's an actor, a mixed martial artist, a middleweight boxing champion from Trinidad and Tobago, the country he will be representing at the 2016 Summer Olympics in Brazil. Daniel shares with us important aspects of his life growing up. He gives insight on his personal spirituality. He provides some unique, introspective aspects of what it's like physically, mentally, and strategically when he's battling opponents in the ring. He then explains how his tardiness in college found him in an unexpected love for acting. This is an interview you won't hear anywhere else. And Daniel, thanks for spending some time with us today on The Flow.
Kurt, thank you so much for having me.
Daniel, okay, you grew up in Trinidad and Tobago, which is off the coast of South America, and it's an English-speaking country. I didn't know much about Trinidad before this interview, and I know that there are legends in boxing and sports that come from your country. Would you mind giving us a little bit of an idea of your home country and what
okay,
it's all about?
Okay, so Trinidad, the country that is closest to in South America is Venezuela. Uh-huh. There's actually some points from Trinidad where you can see Venezuela. It's the western part of Trinidad that you can see Venezuela right from the coastline. And so pretty much the country has about, I believe it's 1.5 million, predominantly English speaking. Obviously, you have a huge Latin influence from South America. The sister island is Tobago. So it's Trinidad and Tobago, but obviously it all falls under one entity of Trinidad. You know, TNT is what you would call it. As far as in comparison to the rest of the Caribbean, definitely be the most industrial because of oil. So in comparison to, let's say, Barbados, where it's the country thrives off of tourism, where Trinidad is more with oil and business. So in comparison to the rest of the Caribbean islands, I'd say that's what would separate Trinidad as far as having a separate identity. What else can I tell you about it? So Trinidad is really known for carnival. So that happens in February. Caribbean folk, they love to party. So pretty much from after Christmas is when you'll have all these parties happening, like pre-carnival parties, and then you have the carnival parties, and then the post-carnival parties. I would say the steel pan is probably, or the steel drum is known most identifiably with Trinidad, if you've ever heard it before.
Sure. Well, tell us about what it was like being a kid in Trinidad and also the landscape of poverty versus wealth. And
it's really changed, and now it's changing again, where because of the decrease in price in oil, so right now the country is really on the brink of some really tough financial times. Mm. So what was happening a few years ago, actually, it was really bad. You had an upper and a lower class. There was no real middle class. Mm-hmm. And that's pretty much how the country has kind of always been. There was a few years recently where a middle class was starting to form, and there was somewhat of a middle class. But now with this oil, it's beginning to separate again. But to circle back, what was happening a few years ago, because the crime definitely started to go up. So what was happening is, let's say you had a daughter and you're a wealthy businessman. People were would kidnap your daughter and hold her for ransom.
Sure.
And this was becoming really rampant in the country. And what was so bad was the police force was in on it, where there was corruption. So millions of dollars are being taken away. And, you know, it was a really crime-heavy time in the country. And right now, that's kind of where it's – people are fearful of where that's where it's going to be headed again, where it's a third world country, you know. So a lot of things that we have here in the U.S., we take for granted, like example, you know, the upkeep of the roads or, you know, just simple luxuries, I guess you would call it. I remember when my grandmother passed and we had to go to get the death certificate. Mm-hmm. And you would think you go into, you know, this office and they'll be like, okay, what was the name? And they'll type it in on a computer and they'll pull up the file and stuff we would think is day-to-day and you take for granted. But over there, you know, Trinidad is classified as a third world country, which it is. I remember going in and they were like, oh, okay, let's check the records. So again, you're thinking it's going to be a computer, but no, they folders on folders on folders that they're going through, and it's all handwritten documents. You know, just simple things like that, or modern conveniences of, oh, hey, I'm trying to get a hold of this person. Oh, maybe I'll email them. That's not an option sometimes. That's taken for granted. You know, just simple things like that, right? Mm-hmm. And then as a kid, obviously, this sounds bad, but as a kid, it's pretty much, I would say, a 10 to 15 year lag almost, if that makes sense as far as with technology.
So you grew up with the greatest toy in history, the stick.
Which, yeah, I was a mischievous kid, so I found creative ways to get myself in trouble, and I guess that's just being a kid, and you know, you're forced to be creative, right?
Sure. So, and growing up there, was your family poor? I know that you moved to Canada at some point. How did that all occur?
So that happened at a younger age for me. Mm-hmm. And my family, we came from humble beginnings. In Trinidad, I would guess we would be considered middle class over there at the time, which is a smaller class. Mm-hmm. My parents, very hardworking. They gave me all the tools I needed to achieve whatever I wanted to. So I'm very, very grateful for that.
And then you ended up moving to Canada. How did that happen?
Yeah, I was really too young to make a lot of sense of it at the time. As far as the transition, though, it wasn't a challenge. Like, I have some friends that, example, grew up in Poland, and they had a huge transitional barrier with learning a new language. So I was really grateful that I didn't have to go through that where you're learning a new language. But as far as day-to-day life, like, yeah, of course there is so many different aspects of growing up in North America as opposed to in the Caribbean, right? Mm-hmm. As a child, I would say I was definitely on both ends of the spectrum with being bullied and being a bully. So I know that there's a lot of immigrant stories, like with children that, you know, when they come into the country, they're either bullied just because, you know, you kids are really mean. They're vicious. Like, you stick out like a sore thumb, or, oh, hey, you talk funny, and they'll make fun of you for whatever it is, right? I was lucky. I didn't really go through – I wasn't bullied for that, or at least I don't think. But it was definitely a transitional period, and as I reflect back on it, I really – really appreciate the sacrifice my parents made to provide me with a better life.
And in growing up there, then, you talk about being bullied and bullying. Was that a form of survival, or was that just something that you realized, hey, you know, I'm going to be a boxer one day. I'm going to start practicing now. I'm kidding.
Yeah, that would be, man, I'd be scared if there was a kid that had that kind of mindset. Whoa. Not a form of survival. I just say, like, when I was bullied, I don't know what this kid's problem was, because as a child, I was really and I still am. I'm hyperactive. So if it was recess, I was always at the basketball court shooting around either by myself or doing something athletic. Like, I would run. I would throw a ball against – like, I was always doing something. So I wasn't really – I was fiercely competitive. But, you know, when you have different grades, right? So this guy that used to pick on me, he was two grades higher than me. And I for some reason, I guess he just didn't like me. So I used to get beat up. they would, you know, just do stupid things in gym class, or, you know, you get beat up. Like, he had like a little quote unquote gang. You know, it's funny. Back then, that sounds, and it, that was really so innocent, as bad as it is, but it was just like, okay, you're going to get beat up, you know, these guys hang out together, or whatever, right? Sure. As opposed to now, you mentioned that, and as let's say, you know, a child being part of a quote-unquote gang, now you think guns, knives, violence, you know, that sort of thing. So I guess you could say that's kind of how things have changed just in the world. But when I used to get picked on by him, I would just go through it, really, where it was, and I would never tattletale or rat, you know, and that sort of thing.
Well, in terms of high school, then you got into sports. You started to do a variety of different sports: soccer, basketball, football,
yeah,
track and field, baseball, swimming. Very active, because you seem kind of like a leader. You seem to have some leadership qualities, and I'm always curious with people that are high energy and have that type of focus. There is a correlation in terms of physical ability, physical intelligence, and a sense of well-being, and a sense of almost like a respect for other people, to the degree that you almost want to be a peacemaker, and you almost want that. Does that tie in for you?
Yes and no. I've learned to tailor that to the situation, right? Mm-hmm. I would say in sports, being a leader, I believe, and you know, this is so cliche, but you have to learn to follow before you can lead. I wouldn't necessarily classify it as a leader. I've always thrived in a team environment. I love that team concept, with everybody working towards one goal, or not even that, just that synergistic effort that you get when people are collaborating on something.
Well, what I'm hearing, okay, so you were a kid, you were kind of a troublemaker, you got bullied, you were bullied, you moved away from that. There's a maturity that came about. Do you attribute that to the sports? Were you still a troublemaker through high school?
No, because high school, I was so busy. Like, I after school, I would have two different practices, and then on top of that, you have homework, and then after that, it's sleep, and then you wake up and you might have practice in the morning. So in high school, it was really, I didn't have much of a high school life, just because it was sports. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I'd say athletically wise, I would attribute that definitely to sports in high school. In elementary school, I would say, or junior high, the only reason why maybe I was so creative is just because I didn't have that wow, this is a great self-realization thing. I didn't have that release of energy. So what was happening as a kid, because I didn't have that, I would get creative to do some sort of mischievous thing, or, you know, something less productive, right? As opposed to in high school, where I had that release of energy in sport. So I kind of had a calendar and a charted pace of where I was going to expend that energy.
Then you got recruited, as you got to your senior year, you got recruited to NCAA Division I and two schools with your best friend.
Yeah.
So we haven't even talked about your best friend.
Okay. So how that whole thing came about was, I was preparing, or just mentally like wrapping my head around going to college in Ohio. There was this college that I was getting recruited by, and he was going to be playing in Florida. And his brother, who also played on the same AAU team, his brother was, I forget where he was going to go to school. I think it was New York. And pretty much his brother was getting recruited by a few colleges as well. And his brother said, hey, so one of the coaches was visiting, and his brother needed to scrimmage because the coach wanted to see him scrimmage. And he needed a couple other bodies. So he just needed basketball players, because we always used to hang out together. So what happened was, when we went to go scrimmage, we all ended up playing, and the coach said, hey, are you committed? Like, did you sign your letter of intent to his brother and to me? And I said, no. And he said, oh, well, just so you know, this is something we could explore. So then the following day, the coach took us out to dinner, explained what college would be like if we went there, and how the living situation is, how the team is, the culture of the team, and their vision. And I remember us going back to his place, and I was like, man, I don't want to not see you, you know, because I wouldn't be seeing him. That'd be our first time we were ever like apart like that. He said, yeah, I don't want to lose you either. And then we just started talking about it. And then I was like, hey, well, what if we all decided to go take this adventure and go to this college together? What do you think? He's like, yeah, you know what? I think we could do that. And then that's really how it worked out. And all now that I'm back in retrospect, that was one of the biggest unknowns that I've gone into, where I remember I had never visited the college. I'd never visited the campus. I had already committed, and here I am getting on a plane, landing somewhere I've never been before. But I knew I was with my best friend, my brother, pretty much, and I knew we were gonna make it happen, and we were gonna make it work.
Well, we definitely want to get into that on the flip side of the break. You're listening to The Flow with Kurt Wallace, our special guest, Daniel Hayes.